As you know, we have a special guest with us this morning. I am very pleased to introduce my daughter, Allie. Many of you have seen her here at various times visiting, and it is my joy to have her preach for us today. She is currently a student at Union Theological Seminary in New York City. She is in her second year, and she's working extremely hard. I'm just amazed with all that she is doing right now. So, Allie, welcome to Wilson Memorial Church.
Good morning. Our scripture reading for today comes from Matthew chapter 2, verses 1 through 12. In the time of King Herod, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, asking, "Where is the child who has been born King of the Jews? For we observed his star at its rising, and we have come to pay him homage." When King Herod heard this, he was frightened, and all Jerusalem with him, and calling together all the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Messiah was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for it has been written by the prophet, 'And you, Bethlehem, in the land of Judah, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah, for from you shall come a ruler who is to shepherd my people Israel.'" Then Herod secretly called out for the wise men and learned from them the exact time when the star had appeared. Then he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word so that I may also go and pay him homage." When they had heard the king, they set out, and there ahead of them went the star that they had seen at its rising, until it stopped over the place where the child was. When they saw that the star had stopped, they were overwhelmed with joy. On entering the house, they saw the child with Mary, his mother, and they knelt down and paid him homage. Then, opening their treasure chest, they offered him gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh. And having been warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they left for their own country by another road. A middle school math teacher over across the highway in Plainfield. Year after year, I found that my students always seemed to be afraid of fractions. I'm sure there are plenty of us adults in here who feel the same way. Fractions are uncomfortable. Give us whole numbers, a nice, clean, easy 1 or 2 or 10. But an important part of my job was teaching my students number sense. So I always found myself trying to encourage them, saying, "Fractions are just like regular numbers. They're just parts of a whole." I actually had a lot of students who preferred to work with decimals over fractions, which was confusing. So I always found myself reminding them that fractions and decimals are the same thing. If you have 1/5, that's equal to 0.2. add another fifth and you get 2/5, and that's the same as 0.4. Add another fifth, you get 3/5. It's the same as 0.6. And you can keep doing this and doing this until you get to 5/5, which is the same as one whole. Nice, clean, and easy. When I had a student I wanted to mess with, though, I would have them do this with thirds. See, thirds are tricky. When you convert a third into a decimal, it is not pretty. 1/3 is equal to 0.33333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333333 decimal point. And I'd ask a student, well, then what's two-thirds as a decimal? And they'd think about it and think about it. And they'd think, well, 0.333 plus another 0.333 gives me 0.666. So two-thirds must be equal to 0.6 repeating. Great, I'd say. How about three-thirds? Easy. Add another 0.333 and you get 0.999. So three-thirds is equal to 0.9 repeating. Wait, I'd stop them. Shouldn't three-thirds be equal to one whole? And they'd think about it and think about it. And usually this conversation would end with the student stomping off. Bruh, this doesn't make any sense. Here's the thing. I myself am a certified math teacher, and I agree. Bruh, this does not make any sense. This issue with the thirds has always stumped me as well. It's something I seem to struggle to wrap my mind around. Every time I try and research an explanation for this, the internet just tells me, yeah, 0.9999 is the same as one whole. Mind blown. I think this has something to do with the fact that any whole can be split up into infinitely many parts. It's hard for us to wrap our minds around this because we live in a very finite and concrete world where if I have a block of cheese, there's a limit to how small I can cut those pieces. But if we think beyond the limits of matter and molecules and atoms and things we can touch, we could slice things into thousandths and millionths and billionths, and so on. 0.9999 repeating is the same as one whole because you gotta take into account all those parts. And there are always more parts than we can even fathom. When we picture one whole, we just picture the number one. Nice, clean, and easy. If we picture a pie that is whole, we picture a whole pie that has not been cut into yet. When we think of a whole song, we think of a melody from beginning to end, on key and uninterrupted. When we picture a person who is whole, well, they must have it all together. But the fact that one whole is the same as 0.99999 repeating is just proof that wholeness is messier than we think. And wholeness can be infinite. In my very early days teaching math, I felt like I had found a sense of purpose that would bring me wholeness in my life. I felt so energized and committed to the calling to close the opportunity gap in an underserved school district. It was a calling that shaped my entire sense of identity and every breath I took. After struggling in office jobs in my early 20s, this was going to be the calling that was going to make me feel complete. This was going to bring me to a nice, clean, easy one. I knew it was going to be hard, but I was going to work at it and work at it and work at it. And eventually I was going to be like one of those teachers that they showed us in our teacher training videos. Those teachers who knew what they were doing, whose classrooms ran smoothly and were an oasis of empowered learning, whose students gave moving testimonials about their positive experiences. This was going to be the job that made me feel whole. A nice, clean, easy one. You can imagine my disappointment and deep shame when I burnt out very quickly. I ended up spending most of my time teaching in this intense tug of war between my love for my students and my feelings of inadequacy. It's a tug of war that ripped and tore at me, bringing me to some of my lowest of lows. This job and this purpose that was supposed to bring me wholeness had left me feeling broken, and I often still struggle to move past that. There was one day during my first year of teaching when I was having a particularly terrible time. It was right after Thanksgiving. The head math teacher, who I had relied on so heavily as a mentor, arrived early before school that morning, gathered up her things, and resigned. I remember feeling so blindsided and so suddenly lost and alone, frantically wiping my tears as I was sharpening pencils before class, willing myself to get it together so my students would not see me cry. And then class began, and I had to teach. I was less than a minute into my lesson when I saw one of my colleagues, one of my dearest friends, sneak into the back of my classroom. And she just sat there, smiling at me, the warmest, most loving smile, attentively listening to my lesson. She was a fellow first-year teacher who taught science. We had started at the same time together. We'd gone through training together. We spent time outside the classroom together, swapping stories of our students and our struggles and our vulnerabilities. We'd cried in her car together. This was her prep period, her one break from the chaos of the day, and on that day, she chose to spend it being present with me in my classroom, knowing that I was having a hard time. And as her love and generosity and support washed over me, and as I felt the deep wells of gratitude and appreciation and love fill up inside me, it felt like we were an extension of one another in that moment. Amidst all the feelings of brokenness and inadequacy, it was enough in that moment to make me feel whole. Now, this wasn't magic. This moment did not flip some sort of switch inside me that gave me all the answers or fixed all of my problems. It did not make me feel like I had it all together or even ever would. It did not bring me to that nice, clean, easy one. But in that moment, it felt like someone truly saw me and all my chips and cracks and crumbling pieces. And they gazed upon me with no judgment, only care, validating my brokenness, reminding me that I was worth caring for, that I was enough, that I was okay. It felt in that moment like I was tapped into some sort of holy, sacred, and abundant love that was beyond her and me. It gave me that feeling of that 0.99999 kind of wholeness, messy and infinite. Even during times of our lives when we are hurting and feeling broken, feeling whole is possible. And I say this because we just celebrated Christmas, a time of year when we expect ourselves to feel a certain kind of wholeness. Because of this, we have a tendency to focus on making everything perfect, right? We hang the lights, We curate the songs we sing and the movies we watch. We wrap our presents neatly with care. We lay out our nativity scene, placing each figurine just right. Baby Jesus, Mary, Joseph, shepherds, and the wise men. Our story from the Gospel of Matthew today, though, reminds us that this perfect scene never existed. The wise men came days or even weeks after Jesus was born. What's important in our story is not that picture-perfect silent night that we imagine. I'm sure nobody in that story felt at a nice, clean, easy one. I mean, think about it. Mary, the teenage mother of a newborn, probably exhausted and super freaked out. The wise men, weary from their travels and getting a really bad feeling about these instructions they had been given by the king. Everyone in this story feeling the weight of the oppressive Roman Empire all around them. The real nativity scene is actually full of broken bits and imperfections and even darkness. It's unreasonable for us to expect feelings of perfect wholeness or a nice, clean, easy one from ourselves either. But when we, with our broken bits and imperfections and even darkness, turn toward God's radical and inclusive love, the kind of love that is sacred and infinite, we are opening ourselves up to the possibility of wholeness. The wise men turned toward it when they followed that star and when they really honored the importance of what it led them to. Maybe we turn toward this love in one singular moment where our heart locks with someone else's. Maybe we turn toward it by being in a community where we can come as we are, carrying our broken bits with us. Maybe we turn toward it by looking deep inside ourselves, greeting our truest, most authentic, vulnerable, and imperfect selves with warmth and care and compassion. Social researcher Brené Brown explains this well when she says that owning our story can be hard, but not nearly as difficult as spending our lives running from it. Embracing our vulnerabilities is risky, but not nearly as dangerous as giving up on love and belonging and joy. The very things and experiences that make us the most vulnerable. It's only when we are brave enough to explore the darkness that we discover the infinite power of our light. Love that. The infinite power of our light. Confusing perfection and wholeness doesn't work. It just leaves us feeling inadequate. This infinite power of our light is actually an infinite, messy wholeness. 0.9999999. A joyful, infinite wholeness that can grow and spread through and over and under and about and into those around us. And as we find our own messy wholeness and help others cultivate theirs, we help to make God's beloved community here on earth whole. Amen.